Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Pat Iyer, and welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. This is a program designed specifically for legal nurse consultants to talk about some of the issues that affect your practice area and healthcare. I have a healthcare expert with me today who is Regina Clark. She is a nationally sought after speaker on a national and international basis, and she founded a company called Creative Performance Solutions, which is a leadership development consulting firm. For the past 25 years, Regina has been helping leaders and teams improve their performance, not only in healthcare, but also in broader industries such as Johnson & Johnson, Medtronic, Westchester Medical Center, and many other associations and corporations. Regina is a speaker, a coach, and she also provides training. We met at the National Speakers Association, the New Jersey chapter, several years ago, and I've heard Regina speak, and I've always been impressed with her knowledge and her ability to connect with her audiences. Regina is an editor, an author, and published a book called Wow Your Customer or Someone Else Will, and we were just speaking about a set of tips that she's preparing for patients to help them understand the healthcare environment and avoid being part of a medical malpractice suit. Regina is also a National Speakers Association member, a certified speaking professional, which is the designation given to people who have extensive experience speaking and is held by less than 10% of speakers worldwide. Regina, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thanks, Pat. It is so nice to be here, and I'm really honored that you even asked me to come participate with one of your sessions. So it's really, really nice to chat with you today.
Well, thank you. I wanted to talk with you, first of all, about what are the four fundamentals? That's a term that we've been discussing. Can you give us a sense of what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. And these four fundamentals, I think they hold true for every organization that wants to improve the experience for the customer. And in healthcare, clearly the customer is the patient, right? So the first fundamental is you have to have the right people. Now, that's really easy to say, but what does the right people mean? Well, in healthcare specifically, years ago, everything was about hiring for clinical competence, right? You need people who are clinically competent and certified and licensed and trained well. That's a given. That's right off the bat. But what you also need is you need to hire these clinically competent people who have phenomenal attitudes, right? Positive attitudes, people that are great communicators. So you need the caring, you need the compassion, you need the level of empathy. So the right person for your organization is not just the clinically competent person, it's the clinically competent person plus having this phenomenal attitude. And that goes for everybody. That goes from the person who is sweeping the floor in the emergency room to the neurosurgeon, and clearly the leadership team as well. And I can't tell you how many brilliant healthcare senior executives I have coached in the past number of years who were a little bit too rough around the edges, right? Brilliant folks, but they were a little bit nasty. They scared some of their staff, and that's not the right person to have in the organization, right? And clearly, you know, I hate to make generalities, but if you're nice or have that great attitude, that great communicator, it's possible that you're less likely to get sued, right? We know everybody does get sued eventually, but be nice, right? So simple. The right person is being nice. That's the first fundamental. The second fundamental is you have to have the right processes. You have to have processes that make sense. Every organization has a flow, right? I call it the patient journey. The patient has touch points. So those processes need to make sense. If there's a broken process in the organization, it needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed immediately. So continuous process improvement is something that happens on a daily basis. That's the second fundamental. The third fundamental is creating a motivating workplace, having the right work environment. Now, sometimes we talk so much about patient satisfaction that we don't stop and talk about employee satisfaction. The employees who work at your organization need to be taken care of. They need to be engaged, right? They need to feel good about their jobs. And if they don't, they're going to get burnt out. So creating an engaging environment is the third fundamental. And then finally, the fourth fundamental is providing the right products and services for your customers, in your case, your patients. So your patients expect you to have the latest, greatest, newest services provided for them. So in the let me just give you one example. In the case of healthcare, right now what people are talking about is telehealth, right? The ability to use Skype or technology to talk to a physician where the patient doesn't even have to go anywhere. So that's a pretty cool innovation in healthcare. So the four things to recap are having the right people, the right processes, the right workplace, and then providing the right services. So that's a big answer to your question, Pat.
And those of us who've reviewed medical malpractice cases can think of how broken parts of those four fundamentals can affect the outcome for a patient. We can certainly understand that if the person who's not competent is in a patient care position, that that can result in patient injury. We know that if the process of communication, for example, in the facility is broken, and a message doesn't get transmitted that's critical, that will influence an outcome. We know that if employees are unhappy and they're grumbling and they're grousing, that sometimes they will see an opportunity for revenge or speaking out. I know a number of attorneys who have gotten phone calls, anonymous phone calls from hospital employees who have said, you know, something really bad happened in our facility and you need to be involved in representing this family. It's sort of a dirty little secret that no one talks about, but I've talked to attorneys who've gotten those phone calls, and one of them took on the case and ended up with a huge award because of what occurred to this patient. And then the services is another piece. If somebody is taken to a facility not equipped to deal with the acuity of the patient, you know, for example, the patient needs to have a skilled neurosurgeon and there is no skilled neurosurgeon on staff, and the person ends up in the hands of somebody who is not experienced and doesn't know what he's doing, that can result in a bad outcome as well.
So there's so many opportunities there for medical error, and that's really what everybody wants to prevent, right? I think of so many physicians that I have met who are just wonderful people who work so hard. They're double and triple booked by their employer, and they are just tired. Right? They are just tired. They're working from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., constantly without a break, and eventually a mistake is going to be made. So we need to really step back and take care of the employees, right? And we're talking about all this patient satisfaction stuff. Well, how about making sure that our team is taken care of, and then that team is going to do a great job taking care of the patients?
There was just a very extensive article, I believe it was in the Boston Globe, about orthopedic surgeons in the Boston area who were scheduled to be in more than one operating room simultaneously. So they would start surgery on one patient and then go across the hall and continue surgery on another patient. And a lot of the patient safety concerns were exposed in this particular article.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like all... Go ahead.
I'm thinking, imagine the things... You said you read that in the Boston Globe. Imagine the things that are kept hidden in the healthcare environment nobody ever hears about, but the staff sees things that happen.
And I think this came to light because one of the surgeons on the hospital staff was concerned about this practice, and he tried to get it changed, and he was not successful. So he started talking to a reporter.
Oh, sure. Sure. I've had physicians share with me in confidence how frustrated they are because of the schedules that they are given on a daily basis. And they're sharing that with me during a coaching session where their stress level is astronomical. And then the employer is wondering, well, why are they so curt with the staff? Well, they're curt with the staff because they're so stressed by the workload right now. So I think there's a lot of little things that employers can do to improve the patient outcome.
That's an interesting connection, Regina, because one of our other podcasts was with Renee Thompson, and we talked about bullying in the healthcare environment. And I'm just making the connection now that if a surgeon is stressed over the intense schedule or the production pressure, move them in, move them out, mm-hmm. that could be a factor in abrupt and obnoxious behavior with the staff.
Oh, absolutely could be. And, it's also a cultural thing, Pat. Years ago, I did a physician leadership training program for a very large healthcare organization. And in the audience, I had about 50 physicians. And the question I asked this entire group was, how many of you have ever been humiliated, embarrassed, or yelled at during your residency? Every single hand in that audience went up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to keep in mind that people that go to medical school are the best and brightest, right? These are very smart people, or else they wouldn't have got into medical school. So here they are at their residency, and maybe for the first time in their life, they're in a professional position where someone is embarrassing them or yelling at them. So then my follow-up question to the physicians, well, how did that make you feel? And collectively, the group agreed, not very good, right? I didn't like being embarrassed. I didn't like being yelled at. I didn't like being humiliated. So then I asked them, well, do you do that to your staff? Would you do that to your staff? I mean, think about that. If that happened to you and you really did not like that, why would you go forward now as a professional person and humiliate or yell at one of your staff nurses, right? We need to change the culture of what's acceptable. We can't yell at a nurse and then turn around and be all warm and fuzzy and professional with a patient, right? I mean, we need to have consistently great communication skills every day, every place, every time, with every staff person and every patient that we encounter.
That reminds me of a story of a patient who overheard her physician screaming at the staff and then walking into her room to take care of her. And she confirmed that the voice that she heard screaming at the staff was indeed her doctor, and she fired him on the spot.
Good for her.
Right.
Yeah, good for her. Yeah, and then people wonder, why did they get sued, right? So it's a lot of little things. I mean, Literally, there are reasons, there are cases that are 100% cut and dry, a medical error was made, and that's grounds for the lawsuit, and that lawsuit's going to go forward. But there's other cases where maybe a patient would not consider a lawsuit, except that particular patient was treated so poorly, not medical error, but for the communication piece.
Yes, and that's, of course, backed up by a lot of studies. The Joint Commission has looked at what is the primary reason why medical errors and sentinel events occur, and it's because of miscommunication or some communication error.
And, I, you know, Pat, I never went to medical school, so I don't know whether or not leadership and communication is currently being given more emphasis in medical school than it was years ago. I think years ago it didn't exist at all. Is it a topic of conversation today in medical school?
That is a good question. My sense is that there's a lot more attention being paid to teamwork and communicating, but I don't know for sure. I do know that the number of women in medical school has outnumbered the number of men who are currently enrolled, and you could draw whatever conclusions you want from that, whether that will change any of the communication issues that go on in primarily a male-dominated profession with a female-dominated nursing profession.
Right, right. You know, I'm thinking back to a few years ago, I did a ton of work for Westchester Medical Center in New York, and they were just a wonderful, wonderful place to work, and we ran what we called the leadership series. So I showed up every month, and I ended up having a whole group of nurses who followed me and came to the sessions, and I really loved them. I got to know them, and they were wonderful. The session, the leadership series, was open to everybody who was in a management or leadership position, and rarely did I see physicians. Once in a while, a physician would come to one of the programs, but rarely did I see them, and I think a lot of that had to do just with time, right? I mean, just didn't have the time. And the nurses don't have the time either, right? And a few of the real savvy, effective nursing leaders, they made the time. You know, they just figured out that their professional development was just as important as anything else.
Well, we talked about these four fundamentals, and I wanted to explore a little bit more the process piece. What is the reasoning behind why that process piece is so important?
Well, you can have the best people in the world, highly clinically competent people with phenomenal attitudes, but then you can put them in an environment where the processes don't make any sense, and because the process stinks, the patient is still not going to be happy. So let me give you an example. Many people say that they understand process, but they really don't. So everything you touch at work is part of a process, and every process has a beginning and an end, a clearly defined beginning and an end, and every process has steps, right? We go from step one to step two to step three. So a few years ago, I was in an emergency room, and after about 6 hours, I was finally admitted to a room. Now, that piece of the process was ridiculous, that it took 6 hours to get me in a room. But let me tell you what happened when I got into the room. So I get up to the floor, and I'm now in the bed in the floor, and a nurse comes into the room, and she introduces herself, and this nurse was fabulous, absolutely fabulous. She was friendly. She was delightful. She was a great communicator. She was smiling. She was welcoming, warm, you name it. She was wonderful. And then I said to this particular nurse, her name is Kathleen, I said, I haven't eaten in about 3 days. Could you please get me something to eat? And then Kathleen looked at me and she said, well, the cafeteria is closed, so the only thing I could get for you would be a frozen dinner. And I looked at her and I said, oh, I really don't want to eat a frozen dinner. How about a banana or an apple or a piece of fresh fruit? Or, and she said, okay, I'll do the best that I can. 45 minutes later, Kathleen walked into the room and she handed me a banana. Now, I was so happy to see the banana. That's an example of a really bad process, right? There should be a way for that nurse who's taking care of that patient to get that patient some food, and it shouldn't be frozen and it shouldn't take 45 minutes. But because the organization, whatever rules they have or systems they have or process they put in place, the process was to close down the cafeteria at X point in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a million processes, there's a million steps that everybody goes through. I can give you another one. You know, I was having an MRI conducted, and I know that the technicians cannot share the results with the patient, right? That's not what they're allowed to do. The technicians need to communicate the information to the doctor. So this technician, he looked at the MRI. He did not see a healthy MRI. I had some serious issues. And then he told me to leave the area and go to another building. That's what he told me. So that process did not make sense. There should have been, that was a safety issue as well, but there should have been a better process. I am sure that the technician was highly trained, doing his job, doing what he was told. His judgment maybe wasn't so great at that point in time, but it was really a process issue. So I do believe there's a lot of opportunities to look at processes. Years ago, I was heavily involved with the area of Six Sigma and process improvement. I worked with a nurse. Her name was Mary Williams. She was a phenomenal person who did process improvement with the Mayo Clinic. And what they did was they actually followed a patient. If you can imagine attaching a string to a patient, right, and seeing how that patient moves around the organization, they found that that patient would go to this floor for one test and back to another floor for a second test and down the hallway for a third test. And the patient had all of this unnecessary, non-value-added movement that the organization was requesting the patient to move through. So what the Mayo Clinic then was to say, wow, this really isn't efficient. We should have, you know, test one here and test two here and test three here, and the patient can easily move from this area to the next area to the next area without going into elevators or down hallways. Right? So those are all process issues.
Mm-hmm. I know that there's been a lot of attention paid towards recruitment and retention of healthcare workers. A great deal of concern about the aging baby boomer population and also the aging instructors in nursing school specifically, with a number of people who want to enter the field and then are not able to get an education. And then once they go into the work environment, they encounter lots of experiences that they're not necessarily prepared for. And this is not a new issue. The book Reality Shock came out probably 30, 40 years ago that described the new graduate going into a work environment and being given all kinds of responsibilities. Tell us about what you think healthcare is doing to address that issue, the motivating or the healthy work environment.
Well, I think it's sporadic. I mean, obviously, not everybody is doing the same thing. I think one of the practices that I've seen that is a phenomenal practice is creating really solid mentoring programs, right, or buddy programs. So whoever this new millennial worker is coming in, you know, and everybody has their onboarding program or their orientation program that they put people through, but that's clearly not enough, right? Because every day there's a new situation. Every day something different can happen. So the key is to have these experienced, again, good communicators, but mentors, people that can serve as mentors to these young folks, not just for 6 weeks, right? For a period of time so you can develop them. And then the second thing is professional ongoing development. I'm just thinking of a chief nursing officer that I've been coaching in a New York hospital, and the woman has been in the same hospital for 30 years. She actually graduated nursing school, went into this hospital, and has stayed and has worked her way up, and now she's a chief nursing officer. And I can't even tell you the interesting conversations that we have during the coaching sessions, but it's all about her development as a leader. And there are concepts that she was never exposed to. There were things she never thought about. There were things that nobody ever shared with her. And I think that's a shame. So she's in her 50s, and she hasn't had that mentoring or that opportunity to learn how to be a better leader. So I do think that's missing, and I think mentoring can fill that gap and solve that problem. But it can't be a program that is started at an organization and it just kind of fades away. You know, it has to be a robust program and a continuous program, and it's needed. And then if we're not doing that, there'll be turnover, right? And again, disgruntled workers.
Mm-hmm. All of which affect patient safety issues.
Oh, yeah. And then, another huge challenge in the United States is when you have the union environments in nursing, right? So you have somebody that's been in nursing for a period of time, and they have the golden handcuffs. They're there because they're a union person, and they're getting away with bad behavior. They haven't been coached and trained and mentored early in their career, right? And I always tell people, when an employee, and this could be healthcare or anywhere, but when an employee behaves badly, they're going to continue to behave badly as long as we allow them to behave badly, right? So, you know, it's important to hire the right person to start with, but what if we don't hire the right person? What if we make a hiring mistake? Well, the minute you make the hiring mistake, you have to address that and coach that person and give them feedback and hold them accountable. And in a union environment, oh my goodness, it's hard to let them go, right? And there's so many people that have said to me, well, I'm stuck with them. Well, how come you didn't coach them? How come you didn't mentor them? How come you didn't hold them accountable? You've been letting them get away with bad behavior. And then everyone suffers, right? The coworkers suffer, the patients suffer, the family members suffer. And then the hospital or whatever healthcare organization gets a bad reputation, right? Because all it takes is one bad apple. So I personally think mentoring is the key going forward.
You know, what you said makes me think of something that I learned when I finished my master's program and took a position as the director of staff development for an urban hospital. One of the concepts that I learned is to look at why people don't do something. And it's a very simple concept, but it dramatically changed the way that I looked at this issue. The question is more like an algorithm. The person didn't do something. First of all, is it because of a knowledge deficit? Did she not know what to do? So you provide training. And then the second question is, did she know how to do it? Well, yes, and she did it wrong. By doing it wrong, were there any consequences to doing it wrong? And that's really the performance, coaching, accountability, counseling, discipline, you know, all of that piece, because you've moved away from a knowledge deficit into a different reason for why that particular behavior was exhibited.
Right, right. Or did the person know how to do it, but there was an obstacle in the way preventing the person from doing it? And the obstacle could be a person. It could be a process, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'll go back to my banana story, but here's this lovely young nurse who clearly knows how to get the patient food, and the obstacle is the hours for the cafeteria aren't conducive.
I can't tell you how many glasses of juice and saltine crackers I have delivered to hungry patients after the cafeteria and the kitchen was closed. I have visions of scrounging in the kitchen saying, oh, what is it that I can give this person? Oh, I know that we stuck some crackers here somewhere. Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah, and it's almost comical, right? People are banging their heads against the wall saying, how do we improve our patient satisfaction scores? I mean, that is such a simple fix.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny part about that hospital stay, it was a gorgeous new hospital, so clean and environmentally very appealing. And as I was leaving the hospital, the day I was leaving, the hospital had put in place a baby grand piano in the lobby with someone playing the piano. And I made a very sarcastic remark to my husband, and I said, boy, they can have a piano player, but they can't get the patient's food when they're hungry. Right? That's my New York sarcasm coming through.
Uh-huh.
But it's the little things.
Uh-huh.
It's the little things.
So. Well, Regina, how can our listeners learn more about you?
Well, they can, thank you for asking, Pat. They can certainly visit my website, reginaclark.com, or they can give me a call anytime at 845-294-7089. You know, for years I have been, you know, like you, I've been in the training and development arena for, I hate to say, this is my 30th year. I'm a little surprised that I've been in this arena for so long. But for years I've been working with organizations, and a couple of years ago I did get sick, and I decided that I want to move forward and specifically work with healthcare organizations to help them improve patient experiences. Because once you become the patient in the emergency room and the patient in the hospital bed, everything has a different focus. So as I was in my hospital bed, all I'm thinking about was, wow, this process could be better. Wow, this experience needs to be better, right? I was actually in the hospital bed thinking as a process improvement person, which is a little bit on the crazy side. Luckily I recovered. I have a full recovery. But I want to figure out how to work with more healthcare organizations, because I know everyone can do a better job tomorrow. So I'm so thankful to you, Pat, for inviting me to be on this show with you.
You've done a wonderful job, Regina, and I know that every legal nurse consultant who listens to this, who's been a patient, will immediately empathize with your statement of laying in the bed and seeing the healthcare system work or not work on their behalf.
Yeah, it's a little scary, and I was scared. I mean, I had never been in an ambulance in my entire life. Being in an ambulance was a scary experience for me. It was scary for my children, for my husband, to know that I was sick, right? And I know this is an experience that many, 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 many families have gone through, but everybody thinks, well, it's not going to happen to me. And I'm not a healthcare professional. I'm a patient, right? So as a patient, to view the healthcare profession and just simple things like the food, right, like the banana, simple things that people can do to make the experience so much more pleasant. I remember when I was actually laying in the emergency room waiting for the room, and it was a six-hour wait, right? And I was fine. I mean, I was laying there waiting to get into a room, and I also knew it was the time of the day when the shift changes in a hospital. So one of the reasons I was being held in the emergency room was because there was a shift change. But I can remember asking the custodian who came in to sweep the floor around me if he had any information when I was going to be moved into a room. And he was a lovely man. His English was broken, but I'm laying there thinking, this is what it has come to, right? This is what it has come to, that I'm laying here and I need information. So I'm asking the custodian, because nobody on the healthcare team has been talking to me. And that's not good, right? That's really not good. And from a legal standpoint, that's not good, because that's when a patient could start to think about the wrong things that are happening as opposed to the right things that are happening. And just to end the conversation, I have to share this with you, Pat. My brother is a medical malpractice attorney. And when I got sick, my brother went into his legal mode, his professional mode, because there were a lot of mistakes that were made. And on the other end of the spectrum, when I left the hospital and I really felt wonderful, All I was doing was counting my blessings and thanking God and thanking the healthcare professionals that had treated me. And I was so happy. I was so happy. I was feeling so blessed that I can see straight, I can walk straight, I can talk straight. I'm fine. I'm going home. My family is fine. There is no way I would consider suing, right? There was no medical error made that was so egregious that I had to sue. But here my brother is thinking, you know, oh, there were mistakes made. There was, and I was, let it go. I am not interested in suing. But we both know that the number of people in the United States that have brought legal action against healthcare organizations is only going up, unfortunately. And that has to stop.
Well, thank you so much for giving us a frame of reference for thinking about those four fundamentals. And I'm encouraged by your stories and your experience in terms of what's improving and what you're seeing changing. All of us in the medical malpractice world do not wish for more medical errors. We wish for better outcomes and less work rather than more. And there are so many different ways that this issue is being tackled. So thank you for highlighting some of those for us today.
Great, great. Well, have a wonderful day, Pat. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. And this has been Legal Nurse Podcast with Regina Clark and Pat Iyer. Thank you for joining us for this program. And please connect with us again when we release our interview next week. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount on this product. You'll put that code LISTENED in the coupon code box during checkout.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.